I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest is going to be Shirley Riva Vernick, who is a novelist, a journalist, and has a book out. It's a YA novel from Cinco Puntos Press called Remember Dippy. It's a fantastic novel, and it brought me back to my adolescence. Not that I wanted to go back. And on Poetic License, we have Emily Yoon. She is a poet living in New York City, and she's going to talk about how poetry is like a hand. And that sounds like a very intriguing subject. In fact, today I encountered this quote as I was reading this morning. I kind of like read different texts just kind of before I start writing. I read this text today. It says, they have hands, but they don't handle. I like that. They have hands, but they don't handle. They don't know how to use their hands. They don't know how to control their hands for positive things. And certainly writing poetry is handling it. And when we talk about Shirley's book, she's a YA novelist. And as you know, a lot of literary fiction writers, including my partner and friend Benjamin Alida Sines, are writing YA novels. And I know a couple of publishers have approached me in the past and says, hey, why don't you write a YA novel? And I never thought that I could, but I think I can. I think what you need to do to write a good YA novel is just get in touch with that child within you. And quite frankly, I don't think you can be a writer without communicating with that inner child, you know, getting to know yourself. Because, you know, when you're a child, everything is new. You're full of wonder. And there's this concept in Kabbalah about ennui, that ennui is the biggest sin of an adult. Once you start getting bored with everything, the sunrises no longer appeal to you, the mountains aren't beautiful, the wind blowing in your hair doesn't do anything to you. But when you're a child, everything is fascinating, everything, absolutely everything. And I think writers, artists need to be in touch with that inner child in order to create good art. And I think even doubly so for people who do YA novels. Irony can only get you so far. You know, irony is saying the opposite of what is true. Like if it's a good day, or let's say it's rainy, you walk outside and you say, oh, what a beautiful day. You're being ironic. And you're really closing yourself off to the wonder of rain. And that's why the poet Maria Rilke says to the young poet in his letters, he says, too much irony is not good for a poet. You have to have that inner childhood. Yet, on the same hand, irony is good because a lot of teenagers are ironic, but they're ironic in a way that is resisting, I think, all the stimuli that's out there that they're beginning to absorb and beginning to just be, you know, fascinated by and wondered by. So I can't wait to talk to Shirley about how she gets into the mind of a child, a mind of an adolescent. That really intrigues me. And maybe sometimes I get a little too much into the mind of an adolescent, and I might see a doctor, for example, or a couple with a baby, and I'll think, oh, they're so adult, they're so old. And then I realize I'm probably 20 years older than them. So stick around. Let's talk to Shirley, and we will hear from Emily Yoon. We'll be right back. Shirley Riva Vernick grew up in Massena, New York, the place where her debut novel, The Blood Lie, takes place. In addition to running a popular storytelling website, storybee.org, her writing has appeared in Cosmopolitan, Good Housekeeping, Ladies' Home Journal, and many, many more. Her latest book is called Remember Dippy, and it is a fantastic novel about two teenage boys. Shirley, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You know, you are quite a prolific writer, but you started off as a journalist for magazines and newspapers.
Yes.
And how did you make the plunge into fiction?
Well, deep down, I always knew I wanted to write fiction. And from the time that I was very young. I used to write stories and even try my hand at longer book-length things. Journalism, I think, was, for me, a way to hone my writing skills and make a living. And so I felt like I was really ready to take that, what felt, I guess, like a risk or a plunge into devoting a significant chunk of time to writing a book-length work. So when it felt right, I did it. And I felt like I certainly hadn't wasted my time beforehand. I had gotten a lot of good writing experience and been exposed to really interesting people and stories.
That's interesting that you say you wanted to write fiction early on. How early? And do you remember the first thing that you wrote?
When I was little, like nursery school age, I used to take a pencil and paper and scribble on a sheet and hand it to my mother and ask her what I had written. And genius that she was, she would read off lovely fiction to me.
Wow.
And it was just not only a bonding experience for the two of us, but it was a real confidence builder and an inspirer. So even though I didn't know what I had written until she told me, I felt like I had written, and I never stopped wanting to, and I couldn't wait till I learned when I went to kindergarten.
Wow, that's a beautiful story, because I imagine, you know, a child who is being read stories and looking at the letters on the page, and it's just these bunch of symbols.
Right.
And imagining that they could recreate those symbols and try to figure out what it was they wrote. That's a beautiful story. Have you ever written about that?
I haven't. I think I did a guest blog post once in which I talked about it, but I've never actually written it out as a story. But that's a great idea.
No, it really is. It's full of archetypal and metaphorical possibility.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always thought that, you know, I don't know how old you are, and I'm certainly not going to ask, but I turned 50 about a year ago. And
congratulations.
Thank you. I made it.
And
yeah. But one of the things that is interesting about getting older is when I enter into my past and these memories that I've held for, you know, years and years that certainly shift in detail, also shift in meaning the older I get. And the more I'm able to look back at my life and say, wow, I was a writer all along. And it seems like you have no problem going into your memories and saying, yeah, I was a writer when I was writing these symbols I didn't even understand.
Yeah, that's a great point. I, like you, as I move along through my life, I am better able to see how that crooked road did lead straight to writing books. Certainly not some of the events and twists and turns weren't things that I would have foreseen, but I think they all fed the process, whether by supplying ideas or coping skills or connections with important people.
Wow. We're talking to Shirley Reva Vernick, author of Remember Dippy and many other fantastic novels. Do you find that occasionally now that you're an adult and you know, I would certainly say a successful writer, I read Remember Dippy and I think it's a fantastic book. And have you ever returned to a subject as an adult that you created as a child?
I guess the short answer is yes and no. I've gone back to some of the writings that I did in high school, and this is probably so quintessential teenagery kind of writing, but I wrote about death a lot, like in my creative writing classes in high school. Sometimes I personified death. Sometimes I wrote from the perspective of a soldier in the trenches. I was really sort of morbidly fascinated by it. And I find that death, either physical death or metaphorical death, loss, always appears in my work somewhere, probably because it's always part of life. But I think that I can sort of follow that trajectory in my own track record from back in those early days of, you know, 9th and 10th grade.
Well, you know, when I was a teenager, I had this idea for a novel. It was basically about this guy who dies, but they made a mistake in heaven, and so they're trying to find a way to get him back into the system, but there's an anomaly in the system, and so he comes back, you know, not as an adult when he died, but as a kid with the knowledge of the adult. And, you know, and that was, you know, really a silly idea. But now that I'm an adult, I'm thinking, you know what? I could write that novel.
where's the silly part? I don't know where the silly part comes in. I mean, look at Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
Look at all kinds of time travel and life after death kinds of fiction. I was just going to say, you just have to decide whether it's going to be a graphic novel or strictly a prose novel, or how are you going to go about it?
Yeah,
can't
you know,
read it.
And I have been thinking about it for many years. But, you know, the reason why I'm asking you all these questions is because when I read your novel, Remember Dippy, which is from the perspective of a 12-year-old boy named Johnny who has to help out on his summer vacation with his autistic older cousin, I'm thinking, this voice is so believable. And I'm thinking, you're accessing some part of your childhood that, you know, rings as authentic. And I recall one of the quotes that is attributed to Pablo Picasso, but of course has been said by many others in different ways, is that everyone's a genius until they're 7 years old. You tend to hang on to that. I mean, how do you do it? How do you make your characters, your teenage characters, so authentically teenagerish?
Well, first of all, thank you for that. Well, first I'll start with the voice of a boy. I grew up with three older brothers. So
that
my,
helps.
My household was testosterone laden, and I just really, really was entrenched in that. And I think that voice inside me, both from my child perspective and adult perspective. And as far as the teenagery voice, you know, sometimes I have to ask myself, am I stuck at that age? am I fixated at that age? And I like to think that the answer is no. I'm not stuck personally in teenage land, but I'm fascinated by it. For that reason, I've become an informal student of teenageriness over the years. It's just such a wonderful time when everything is so intense, fresh, profound, you know, growth-inspiring, and it just seeds so many story possibilities that I like to spend time there. I like to spend time with teenagers. I have two teenage daughters, and with their friends, and I like to read young adult literature, and I do like to sort of live in my mind when I'm creating in that voice, and it just seems to be something that I can do and that I enjoy doing.
We're talking to Shirley Reva Vernick, whose novel, Remember Dippy, is just incredible characterizations, the relationships, the goth girl, the angst, and even the heroism, you know, possible within a teenager. I could see this as a movie. I mean, there's so many plot twists that are organically growing out of character and character need. And the language is, you know, I've never had to go back and reread a sentence.
Oh, thank you.
Any chance that this story might ever be a movie?
Well, of course, I would love to see it as a movie, and I think that it could be. If the question is Hollywood knocking at my door as we speak, sadly, the answer is no. But hope springs eternal.
Right. I'm still waiting for my first novel to be made into a movie. In fact, I'm looking at my phone right now thinking the call just might come. So how is the book doing?
The book is doing well, and I think that it is finding, in particular, a happy home in public and school libraries, as well as in homes.
Right.
Because I think that it's, and I hope that it is, because this is what I aim to write, is not only a fun, often funny, engaging story, but one that has teaching moments, and one that reflects that people are really more than their differences. and that our differences are actually what can really make us shine and can be points of connection to other people in our friendships.
Oh, that's very beautifully stated. We're talking to Shirley Reva Vernick, author of Remember Dippy. And if you're a teacher at the high school level or even at the college level, and you or junior high even,
yes.
this is a book that you might want to look at and consider for your classroom. It's put out by Cinco Puntos Press, which is a local El Paso Press run by Bobby and Lee Bird, great people. I'm curious, here you are in Massachusetts. You've written for, you know, these great magazines, Cosmopolitan, Good Housekeeping, Ladies Home Journal. How did you end up with Cinco Puntos Press?
So it all started about 4 or 5 years ago when I had written my first young adult novel, The Blood Lie, which is based on a real blood libel hate crime that happened in my hometown in northern New York in the 1920s. I was looking for a publisher that I thought would be a good fit in terms of the age range that the book was written for, young adult, and the subject matter, mm-hmm. which is fiction but also historical fiction, had a Jewish angle but also crossover into the, you know, general secular population. And Cinco Puntos ended up being the one. It just really felt like a great fit, and that gut feeling on my part really bore itself out. Bobby, Lee, Johnny, everybody over there has really been wonderful to work with, both editorially and just in the mechanics of getting a book out there, you know, once the writing part is done. So it's been a really fruitful relationship for me.
Yeah, they're great people and very important to, you know, not only the literary community, but here locally, they're just very, you know, we're very glad to have them. But one of the things they do very well is choose YA books. So being published with them, I think just that in itself, I think should make people say, well, I want to pick up this book, because they do great jobs with the YA novel. They must be fun to work with.
They're really fun to work with, and I have gotten that feedback when I've done interviews or guest posts for blogs. When they find out the book is from Cinco Puntos, they're very receptive. They really like the Cinco Puntos books, and, you know, even though they're at least 1,000 miles away from me, it feels like they're a family, and they've taken me into the fold, and they all have a great sense of humor. Even, you know, during stressful, overworked times. Yeah. And it's very much a cooperative process, I think.
So let me ask you, are you working on a novel right now?
I am. I have a book coming out in May.
Tell us about that.
Called The Black Butterfly. It's being released on May 6th. It's a young adult novel about a girl named Penny, who is the daughter of a failed ghost hunter.
Oh, nice.
And Penny is very skeptical and eye-rolling about her mother. And until over Christmas break one winter, the winter covered by the story, where she's at an old bed and breakfast in northern Maine, and she discovers that she herself is the one with the supernatural gift. It creates all kinds of conflict and really forces her to grow up and reassess her relationships. And then, of course, I always have another young adult novel that I'm working on right now. And this is not an historical novel like The Blood Libel was. It's set in contemporary times, but it does have an historical World War II connection that brings past and present together.
Do you like to geek out on researching history?
Oh, totally, totally. And it's so relatively easy with the web.
Yeah.
There's really no reason not to, but yeah, I could really lose myself in hyperlinks.
Nice.
You know, you look one thing up and a term comes up or an event in history that you didn't know, and you're off and running, and it's a real education.
Yeah, you know, the people who read your books are so young, they probably don't know what life is without links. But, you know, I was thinking about, you know, one of my antepasados, literally speaking, is Jorge Luis Borges, and he was all about the labyrinth. And I was thinking, if that guy had access to the web, he would never leave.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
would be the ultimate yeah. labyrinth for him, going here and going there. Are you ever going to just quit writing fiction and going back to just writing magazines, or are you just hooked forever?
I'm totally hooked. I'm totally hooked. I've written a couple of essays along the way since I've started writing books, and I may do that from time to time as the inspiration strikes me, but fiction and book-length fiction is really my bag.
Well, you do it very well. That's for darn sure. And I would suggest everyone pick up Remember Dippy. It's a fantastic read by Shirley Reva-Vernick. We're running out of time, Shirley, but I want to direct our listeners to storybee.org, where you gather a bunch of oral stories. Well, they're probably written stories, but they're read by the writers, I assume. You can spend hours on that site. It's fantastic. Check it out. It's storybee.org. Also, Shirley Reva-Vernick has her own webpage, and you can check out all of her books. Remember Dippy is the latest, and it's by Cinco Puntos Press. Check it out. Shirley, thank you so much for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Thank you, Daniel. It's been a pleasure.
Hi, I'm Sam Calvin Brown. I'm a student in the UTEP Bilingual MFA in Creative Writing, and I'm going to read The Lake Isle of Innisfree by W.B. Yeats. I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavement's gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core. I'm Sam Calvin Brown, and that was The Lake Isle of Innisfree by W.B. Yeats.
I am Emily Yoon. I am currently pursuing an MFA in poetry at New York University, where I am assistant PR editor for Washington Square Review. I also work for Late Night Library as a host of the podcast Late Night New York. My poetry centers around unique Korean experiences and sentiments, which I will talk about more in my essay. I am part of a group called The Localists, which my friend J. Scott Brownlee formed for fellow poets who write about certain landscapes or places. I like to think about a poem as a hand. I played with this idea after my friend poet J. Scott Brownlee told me last year a good poem should always have a moment when a hand reaches out and touches the reader on the shoulder. Because I believe that poetry is a form of spiritual communication between the poet and the reader, the poem hand metaphor sticks to my mind. It's also fitting because usually you can cover a poem with your hand on the page, and because a poem is a small piece of art you can easily carry both in your hand and mind. I remember reading Eastern Sentiments, a collection of essays by Lee Tae-jun, a writer from the colonial Korean period. In it, he quotes a Swiss scholar named Haruri, who said, "A person's hands are the best way to get to know someone. And if the hand gesture is frivolously affected, if the arms are completely spread open, or if the handshake lacks decorum, if the hands are held out at once, if the hand is shaken with a fuss or is grasped for too long and not let go, this always leaves a suspicion on the other side that there might be the intention of trying to leave a certain impression. Now, I must note that I was reading this collection translated from Korean to English, and the original quotation has gone through God knows how many translations now, and it is unclear who this Swiss scholar Haruri is. Regardless, we can apply this quotation to our metaphor. There are poems that completely disorient us, make us feel uncomfortable, or take us on the wildest journey to an unvisited land. This is good. What the poet is trying to tell you is being communicated. What is art anyway? It is supposed to challenge us to think about things that never crossed our mind or in ways that we never considered and see the wonderful and sometimes terrifying beauty in them. As a poet greatly influenced by classical and modern Korean poetry and Korean experiences, I try not to have a poetic hand that simply points to facts or closes into such a tight fist so that no one can understand what it holds. I want to have my palm up, place on it the jewels of my culture, and offer them to the reader. Then the reader can play with them or view them the way he or she desires. To do this, for instance, I use direct translations of what my family says or Korean idioms for the universal truths in them and the exquisite strangeness when translated. I weave my knowledge and experience in Korea into poems that express my current emotions or illustrate my life in New York. I am telling you what is important to me and who I am. A poem can be extremely intimate and personal, but all poets want to touch the reader's heart in some way. Do you feel like a poem is grabbing you by the arms and saying, "Listen to me, this is happening," or motioning to a scene and saying, "Go find the beauty in this"? In high school and sometimes in college, many are told by teachers what to see in a poem. And when the students do not succeed in that, as Muriel Rukeyser said, they feel with a painful, shocked awareness that here was something outside their reach. But that only happens because the hand of the poem is pushed away from the reader in certain classrooms. A good poem is always reaching out to you, whether to caress you or shake you to the core. Let it be a conversation between just you and the poet first, and you'll understand the soul in its gesture, its language, its images. It is up to you to discover sensations and meaning. If you encounter a poem from a different language, culture, era, etc., don't be afraid. Let it take you to places and slowly trace its lines, its softness, and its hardness. Take its hand. For Words on the Wire, I'm Emily Yoon.
I'd like to thank Shirley Riva Vernick for joining us today. It was a fascinating interview. Make sure you read Remember Dippy. It is a great book, and it will bring you back to your adolescence. I'd also like to thank Emily Yoon for that lovely poetic license. I just have to say, I met Emily in Seattle at the AWP conference. I was invited by Chang Ray Lee to a party up in his hotel room, and Emily was there. She knows Chang Ray, and we got to talking, and I thought, this is a brilliant woman. And so I'm glad she was able to share that fascinating poetic license with us. Join us next week when we're going to have another great show. I'm Daniel Chacon, and don't forget, the next book you read may save your life.
I'm up on the tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on the tight rope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head is all you see.